This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we go to the first annual Olympic Peninsula Farmers Convergence and Mixer, where we hear firsthand from farmers about obstacles to their success and the solutions they seek. So now, let's go inside the Compass.
Personally, I'm really excited about material I've recently come across that describes to me the enormous potential for soil to sequester carbon. It's said that there's more carbon right now sequestered in the soil than in the atmosphere, the oceans, and all the terrestrial vegetation combined. And that's really the emphasis of our focus in talking with the farmers today is good soil management practices from the perspective of sequestering carbon in the soil.
There'll be Menu for the Future, which you're going to have a discussion about, and you're in the library space.
Okay.
And then there's the Herb Growers Cooperative. That will happen in here. And then there's also other discussions from 4 to 5. They're up on the board here as well. And I would imagine that a lot of this will continue in the unorganized fashion as well.
Build is the first annual Olympic Peninsula Farmers Convergence and Mixer. The event at Finn River Farm and Cidery on the first Sunday in December drew farmers and others interested in, quote, celebrating farming and building local agriculture from far and wide, with its promise not only of workshops and demonstrations on subjects ranging from carbon farming to building an herb growers collaborative, but of networking opportunities and even a good old-fashioned barn-style dance featuring the high-waisted Ramblers playing squares and two-steps into the night. Perhaps the best attended of the workshops and discussion groups that went on throughout the afternoon at the comfortable old farmhouse that now serves on weekdays as a co-working space for the agriculturally minded was the one on the impacts of government policy and regulation on farmers, a conversation that could have far-reaching ramifications as the farmers prepare position papers to present to county planning officials leading up to next year's revision of the county's comprehensive plan. Moderated by Washington State University Extension Coordinator Nicole Witham, the discussion brought some of the area's most experienced farmers, like lifelong dairyman Roger Short and Solstice Farms Linda Davis, together with a large group of new young faces looking to get their start in a business in which factors such as the cost of land and the requirements of food safety often present financial barriers that seem insurmountable. Today on the Compass, we bring you excerpts from that conversation. First up is veteran farmer Linda Davis.
Yeah, I'm on the Food Policy Council as the farmer representative. What we were asked to do as a council, from my understanding, was to put our heads together and advise the commissioners about how the Growth Management Act can affect food availability and security. And we talked about a thing called ag density. And there were a lot of people who were horrified. Of the word density scares the living daylights out of them. But the density we're talking about is not little houses every 2 feet. The density we're talking about is the possibility of smaller farms. And that kind of density gives us neighbors instead of people 2 miles down the road. They're just a little while down the road. And most of us who farm think good neighbors make it all so much more worthwhile and sometimes even make it possible when it wouldn't be otherwise. So can, you know, some kind of a farm community that's tighter. The land that I farm is right in the middle of Beaver Valley, and it's wet, deep, rich peat soil that's some of the best land on the planet. And it's been used for a very long time now, primarily for cows and hay. We're now looking at Ag 20 zoning in our valley. We would like to have the option, if you are willing to sign something that says you will keep it in farming, zoning down to 10 acre sizes instead, which would give people a foot in the door. And for many of us, 10 acres would support us on that kind of land. We have 33 acres and we only actively farm about maybe 2 acres. The rest of it is pasture for sheep and, you know, the same old cows and hay kind of things. I see faces here of young people who've been looking for land, some of them for 3 to 5 years. I know very well what their challenge has been. And I'd like to see land in many more hands and lots more boots on the ground. There are a bunch of other things that I think are important to bring up. One being that we would like to see a farm policy council started that would be 2 or 3 farmers, people from the conservation district, the land trust, who would get together once a month to hear arguments for variances. You know, if somebody says, I need one more house because the old farmer who's going to sell this to me needs a place to live till the end of his life. Can't I get another house? Okay on this. Those would be the questions to put to the Farm Policy Council. And we wouldn't have probably the right to make decisions, but hopefully the powers that be would listen to us.
I'm a local farmer. I do a lot with livestock and have been really pushing towards sort of regenerative approaches to farming and looking at not only how can we produce food, but how can we do it in a way that's actually improving the land and ecosystem function and creating habitat and things like that. And so support those kinds of ends, initiated a discussion group focused around those themes of community ecology and food security. And we also have a potluck. And so just kind of getting caught in the middle of things, of all the debates and discussions around what our future is going to look like. I had some disagreements with some of the food policy council stuff, mostly the subdivision of agricultural lands and smaller parcels. And so I kind of wrote some things about that, and then also just some other thoughts, just you know, things that I think would be really helpful for farmers to kind of remove a lot of barriers to farming and make it more feasible and possible.
Ellen O'Shea at Eagle Mountain Farms. I am very much in support of a new model pertaining to people being able to live on the land as in a group and having more housing on the land. It's the culture I grew up as a child, where all the families lived together and helped each other. I would like to support you. I'm really interested in your report and hope to get involved in that.
So I'm going to jump in here, and what I'd like to ask everyone here is that what type of regulations, whatever they may have been, affected or encumbered your farming effort? A show of hands would be awesome if anybody, just that general statement. No, Roger, really?
I shouldn't have come today. Anything to do with the land use in Jefferson County is very negative on my heart. I've had health problems as a result of the distress. I was involved in fighting the 450-foot buffer from the edge of the wetlands that took 495 of the 500 acres I farm. And every time I try to do something, there's some regulation that comes up that makes it more difficult. All these visions of trying to do things right is very troublesome. I've been walked off the stage at a public hearing one time by the sheriff. And they had police escorts at the courthouse, and they saw me come to the courthouse. You know, there's some things that happen that when they take the government from some regulation, it takes hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars from your viability of your business. It makes you feel very bad. I don't have any feelings that I want to shoot someone or anything like that. I mean, I don't have that feeling type thing, but I have some. The critical areas in drainage is the important things that we need in Chemical Valley to continue farming. I see some of the crops and the peats. Everyone talks about the good peat soils. Well, the potato farmers up in Quatcom County say when they cultivate every year, they're losing half an inch of soil every year. And some of the fields keep sinking all the time. Chemical Valley is set for pasturing. I've been a dairyman all my life until 12 years ago, and fighting all kinds of regulations. And a lot of times I have a letter that I have that the unintended consequences of federal regulation, it's no end to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. So, Eagle Mount Farms, we're not the cidery, by the way. We're across the valley. We're all good friends. So our idea was to diversify our crops and have vegetables, native plants, and herbs. and to create value-added products, because when we tried to sell directly to the market, we couldn't make enough money to live on, basically. And one of the experiences we had to do with herbs, and we wanted to create a poultry seasoning, put it in a bag, and there were 7 different ingredients in it. So we went through WSU for their value-added project class, which was $250, and they came out to talk to us because we wanted to put a kitchen into our lower barn. And what they came up with is that every herb in that package has to be certified yearly that that's what's in the package. $250 a year per herb. Well, that's a lot of money for us. We couldn't get a kitchen because our water comes from a well system that might have wild water in it, so we have to bring water in. Eagle Mount Wine and Cider has to do that now, too. So that would be another cost. This building is already built. It's an old barn. It's got walls and electrical and everything. It would have been a minimum of $25,000 to put in a kitchen to certify it. That was just from the state, and then the health department would have to come out. And they were concerned about us harvesting water off our roof for our crops and putting a secondary septic system in to hold whatever runoff we were watering the plants, they're washing the plants. By the time we were done with their list, we just gave up. And what we're doing now is joining the newly formed area Farmers Herb Cooperative and hoping to create a common label and share resources, a kitchen and a drying shed and everything. We can't do it on our farm because we can't afford to have any regulatory people on our farm to tell us how to make a simple product. But we're hoping as a group that we'll have more power to fight what has gone on with these regulatory groups.
So I'm hearing that not only environmental or land use regulations, but food safety or processing or value-added business
and
type
the health department
regulations.
They've come down the creek now, taking samples for E. coli.
Yeah.
Anybody who's gets one of those,
yeah,
they have to look at their septic system. It can be 50 years old, but you have to redo it. And
mm-hmm.
That has scared everybody away from bringing any animals or any crops onto their land.
Skeeter?
I just want to bring to everybody's attention, there's a group started in Portland called Recoding, and they work with the city government to change codes to make them easier on the citizens and to make them more practical. So it's a way of adjusting the rules, in our favor, you might say, or the people's favor. That's just one angle to look at it. We need an agricultural recoding group that assists people in these kind of things, but it's a group endeavor to do that. And so I just want to mention recoding.
We have a farm in Chimicum, Kodama Farm, and we're trying to build a commercial kitchen. And our problem lies with the regulations as well, and the problem is that the rules aren't evolved around the technology that's available. We wanted to do a similar rain catchment system to Ellen, and the county was saying that we would need to have an engineer operate the entire system certified, and then just the estimate for what that system would cost would be $40,000 just to have potable water to use in our kitchen. And it seems like there's technology available that would be much more affordable to people that could still produce the same results that they're seeking around the rules that they've established.
One thing that our position paper has on it is a wish to have quantifiable benchmarks where you can actually test something instead of just saying no, no, no. Say, well, how about we test this? It's being done all over the country by other people. Could we test it and see if it actually works instead of just here, no? It wouldn't be without cost, but at least if we learn something from it, it might ease it for the rest of it. Everything that the farmers in this room are doing that's illegal, people living in ag buildings, big one, totally illegal, but I don't know of a single farm where some of that hasn't gone on, and it's gone on because of necessity. And I would like to see some of those issues that I know are being blown off. And we're not just a bunch of lawbreakers. We're doing what we have to do to make our farms work. And I'd like to see those issues looked at a little more kindly by the regulatory bodies.
Food safety seems to come to the top whenever this conversation comes up. I know that for myself, I have a small home dairy and I milk cleanly by hand and use my own dairy products at home. I have a system that's quite clean. I've worked at commercial dairies. I know the food safety laws and the animal husbandry side of it. And it's difficult when you have something that could be a viable business, but there's just kind of minor stepping stones in your way. But it's all there for a purpose. So I always have to say that, like you were saying, the illegal things that come on, there's a reason why some of those things are illegal in terms of food safety, and we always need to kind of keep that in mind.
My name is Catherine. Commercial Kitchens has been siming for us in the county for almost 8-10 years, I think. And a couple of things I've thought of that I think a farming innovation team could look at is the county requires that the food safety agent come up with her own salary for the position. It's not funded with general funds. It's a fee-based position. And I particularly saw a tremendous increase in inspections and citations when that happened, because it creates the wrong incentive for her to do the work, right? So I think a move to say that whether she writes one ticket a year or 100 tickets a year, she's funded. I think that would be an incentive change. The second one is one of the reasons that you might not want the laws changed, because then you got 2 years and it's very contentious in our community. The fact that things are not enforced, it can be on the books, but just like a state patrol guy, he doesn't have to write a ticket every time he sees somebody speed. That's a way that the county commissioners and the jurisdictions could say, we're not going to take legal liability if somebody gets hurt in that building, but we're also not going to enforce it because we understand we don't have a viable option in this county right now. You know, I've been asked a couple times to encourage that farms, just like B&Bs, can do any processing they want in the kitchen. And I'm not sanguine with that in my position, because none of us can afford to have a major breakout in this community. We all suffer if something comes. I was in England when Mad Cow Disease came. I saw the farming industry fail because of 2 or 3 bad farmers. So I think you always have to start with, we all benefit from good food safety. We all want that. What we want to figure out is a way that we can afford it and a way that we can innovate to make it better.
I'm from Island County, but I've done some
Island County.
Okay, thank you. But I've also seen incubator commercial kitchens established not only on the south end of our island, and I have seen niche farmers being able to come in and use that commercial kitchen that's for everyone to come in and use. They have their designated spot. It's inspected. There's someone there who monitors it all. Everyone knows the rules. And they can get then, without that massive amount of money, used to be able to get their product certified and sell it.
So I'm going to shift this. I feel like this conversation is perhaps leading to something that we all may or may not be involved in, is that's meat processing. This is something that comes up over and over again, and our producers are really, again this year, in a crunch because of some issues with local processing units being on and offline, and I'm speaking about USDA processing. So is there anyone here in this room that would want to share anything?
I'm Jenna. I am the meat department manager at the Chimicum Corner Farm Stand. At the store is a retail location. We can only purchase USDA slaughtered and USDA processed meat. And there is only, at the moment, we'll say one location on the West Coast within 5 hours of driving distance that you can get an animal slaughtered and processed at, which is in Sandy, Oregon, which is Buxton, which is where primarily the Shorts gets theirs.
All of ours.
All of theirs processed. And Chimicum Corner Farm Stand would like to purchase lots of local meat. That is my goal, to purchase as much as we can. But I feel like we're in a crunch because there used to be, we'll say, a mobile unit which didn't move.
Yeah.
Which had been located in Yelm for, I'd say, 3 years, which has finally kind of closed down, and it is the one that Nicole mentioned that's been going on and off for the last 6 months or more. So we, as a community, are in a crunch, as well as Clallam County, because they are also hauling their animals to this USDA processing in Yelm or in Sandy, Oregon. And there are a few other processors in Bellingham or on the island cooperative, but they are far away and they will not come here. So I think
where they are cooperatives that require a membership and they are not taking any
right.
no members.
Correct.
Or they're a ferry ride away and you add that to your transport.
Right. Yeah. So there's a big need for a USDA slaughter facility.
And then wrap and pack is the other side of that too. So often when it gets to this conversation, there's all these little ins and outs and lingo, but you have to have a slaughter facility where animals are dispatched and usually halved and cooled and then transported to a wrap and pack facility, which is the actual butcher, where that gets broken down into all different kinds of cuts. So we have neither of those that are USDA, except for Key City Meats is a USDA, but they do very much just their own front of house sales and focus on seafood. They don't have a rail system in the back where they can receive primals or large animal cuts. So I know a lot of meat from the community is stored at this fellow's farm, not including his own. That's another issue too, is storage. Cold storage is another thing associated with this. Does anybody else in the room have anything to add to that?
Every step of the processing has to have a federal inspector. Our federal inspector to come up here is going to come from Olympia or Chehalis, someplace like that. And they work 8 hours a day, so you got 2 hours come, 2 hours back to be able to check on things. They have to check, see the live animal, they have to take a blood sample, they have to see the organs, they have to see it when it's on the rail, they have to see it after it's ready to go into the cooler, they have to see it when it's being aged a couple times, they have to observe it while it's being cut and wrapped. That makes it very difficult. There's no reason Washington State Department of Agriculture cannot do it with some legislation. And I know Steve Theringer has talked to me, Representative Steve Theringer talked to me a few times about it, and probably should get in touch with him and see if we can't get some legislation going to get some Washington State to do the inspecting. I thoroughly believe in food safety, and it's a very, very important thing. But some of the other garbage that goes along with it, it's just kind of bureaucratic stuff to make it difficult to do anything. And some of the regulations that they have is so far off and so stupid that, I mean, in a modern age that you just have to change it.
I have a question from some other groups I'm working with. Is the sentiment of the farmers that you want to have these things, both kitchens primarily, but also meat processing, decentralized through the county, or would you be willing to support a centralized commercial ag center either at the airport or somewhere here in the Chimicum Valley?
I would say that the products and the need vary so much. I mean, just like the food system itself, it's like so varied, and it really very much, I think, depends on the product that wants to be made. Because I know that for me personally, I'd love to have a charcuterie business where I could dry cure and age whole cut meats. Now, I can't do that in the same space that someone's making kraut. It has to be a completely separate facility that makes it difficult to share. And then there's also, I think in some terms, a long-term cold storage is just a huge issue.
One of the custom processors told me that not too long ago, it used to be that a veterinarian could come inspect an on-farm slaughter and kind of basically sign off, and you could basically sell stuff behind the case in different butcher shops.
You mean as in the health of the animal?
Yeah.
Like a necropsy.
You'd be like, okay, this looks healthy to me. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of basically we distribute it locally at a very cost-effective way.
And something to be aware of, really, is that if you want to keep it small-scale farming, it's perfectly legal to sell off the farm as long as you're selling your animals in holes and halves.
Mm-hmm.
And farm slaughter is a healthy way, if you've got it set up right, for animals to come into the slaughter floor full of adrenaline. And it's a way to keep an eye on how it's being done as well, mm-hmm. if it's on the farm. So that's a possibility for small farmers to find a home for their meat to families who, and sometimes you need to buy them a deep freeze. Deep freezes are available on Craigslist for cheap all the time. And we bought two or three when people said, we don't have a place to put it. Mm-hmm. So we got them in the deep freeze. And then they kept buying our land.
I'm from Michigan originally, and there were some farms that got together as a cooperative to sell their animals in wholes and halves, and then to hold kind of like a guild, classes where people could come and collectively buy the animals, and then once it was theirs, then they could cut and wrap it themselves. And they brought in butchers and different people with that skill and had all of the facilities there. But the cold storage thing was an issue, and so one older farmer volunteered to decommission one of his walk-ins and turn it into a cold storage collective, sort of food hub place, something they still do in Europe and Switzerland and places like that, where everybody pays a percentage of the utilities and the taxes just for that one little piece, so that they can get around some of these things. And I mean, with poultry as a farmer, you can still do it on the land under a certain number of birds a year. I think it's 2,000 for Washington State. And so not everybody knows, not all customers know that you can safely buy direct from the farmer. And when the farmers get together and are willing to kind of do some collaboration, and then the customers are too, then sometimes you can solve the problem with that.
We've had a farm tour here for several years that the eaters get to go and visit the farmers and meet the farmers and get comfortable buying from the farmer's market. I think we need a separate kind of farm tour for our elected officials, mm-hmm. to have them specifically visit examples of farms and hear this kind of conversation, because I've heard for years, even the people in Olympia have not got one clue what they're regulating about, because they've never set foot on a farm.
There's one thing that I wanted to throw out there that's a conversation that's also been kind of going on in this community. I have heard several comments that are kind of related to forming some sort of group or guild or network to talk about these types of things more, and maybe even get to eat food together or, you know, do more fun things. So I wanted to throw this out there. There's a group that is kind of working with some of the folks of the Grange to help reinvigorate that as a community gathering place. And I'm not speaking just solely as a space for your next birthday party or something, but a place that really is what the Grange kind of, in some form or another, has always been an agricultural institution or gathering place. So, that being said, who would be interested, like show of hands, if there was some form of like a monthly get-together that had, say, an informal potluck element and then a farmer-to-farmer education or discussion element, and would be happy to come on a monthly basis? That's fantastic.
At the first annual Olympic Peninsula Farmers Convergence and Mixers Workshop on Government Policy and Agriculture, with speakers including Linda Davis, Luke Mason, Nicole Witham, Roger Short, Catherine Burrill, Judy Alexander, and others, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. and repeats the following Saturday at noon. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.